Neil Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, overnight a tentative deal with the New York State Corrections Officers Union that could end the ongoing strike. We'll also have reaction from NYSEG customers who attended yesterday's workshop at the Sullivan County Government Center. Did they get the answers they were looking for? Dan Hoost is here, as he is every Friday, with the latest from Monticello, including how the county is helping nearly 300 workers who are losing their jobs at that PepsiCo plant that's shuttering in Liberty. And Bethel Woods is empowering teen creativity with a new program, Project Identity Open Studios, fostering the next generation of innovators. And the Damascus Manor Community Center is hosting its fifth annual Maple Syrup Harvest Pancake Breakfast tomorrow. That's all coming up. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Korva Coleman. President Trump meets Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House today. They're supposed to sign a preliminary deal that shares Ukrainian critical minerals with the U.S. Trump insists this is an important step toward reaching a peace deal with Russia. He has been wanting it in recompense for U.S. aid to Ukraine.
The American taxpayers will now effectively be reimbursed for the money and hundreds of billions of dollars poured into helping Ukraine defend itself, which by and of itself is a very worthy thing to do. We've paid far more than any other country.
But Ukraine's president has also insisted on U.S. security guarantees in order to bring an end to Russia's invasion of his country. In the U.S., a federal judge in California says the Trump administration's mass firings of probationary federal workers is likely illegal and must be halted. NPR's Andrea Hsu reports the judge ordered the Office of Personnel Management to rescind some of its directives to terminate federal workers.
Several labor unions and civic organizations sued the Trump administration, saying its Office of Personnel Management had violated the law by ordering agencies to fire probationary employees en masse. In court, the government argued that it was merely an ask, not an order. U.S. District Judge William Alsup rejected that argument, noting that the firings happened suddenly and across so much of the government. Because of standing issues, he issued only partial relief to those agencies whose firings affect the civic groups that joined the lawsuit. They include the VA, the Small Business Administration, the National Park Service, the National Science Foundation, and others. He scheduled another hearing in 2 weeks. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
The U.S. Education Department has launched a new website called End DEI. The public can file complaints there about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in public schools. The federal agency says it will use this tool to find areas for investigation. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a slowdown in inflation last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average soared about 230 points in early trading.
According to the Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve, consumer prices in January were up 2.5% from a year ago. That's a slightly smaller annual increase than the previous month. Stripping out food and energy prices, which bounce around a lot, the core inflation rate was 2.6%. Personal income jumped in January by nearly a full percentage point, thanks in part to the annual cost of living increase in Social Security and other benefits. People spent less of their income last month and socked away a little more. The personal savings rate increased to 4.6%. 5 years ago, before the pandemic hit the U.S., the savings rate was 7%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, stocks are now mixed. This is NPR. Health officials in Texas say they've identified 146 cases of measles. 20 people have been hospitalized. Most of the measles cases are in children who were not vaccinated. One of the children who wasn't vaccinated died this week. Federal health officials have reported a handful of other cases of measles in other states. The first all-female team is headed for the edge of space, apparently sometime this spring. NPR's Amy Held reports the private space company Blue Origin announced the historic lineup, including a pop superstar, on its space tourism rocket flight.
In Fireworks, she sings about shooting across the sky.
Now, Katy Perry is set to do it for real, some 62 miles above the Earth. Jeff Bezos's private space company has long leveraged celebrity for a boost in the tourism space race. Also set to ride is his fiancée, Lauren Sanchez, a helicopter pilot, former NASA rocket scientist Aisha Bowe, civil rights champion scientist Amanda Nguyen, filmmaker Carrie-Anne Flynn, and CBS News broadcaster Gayle King.
I'm so afraid, but I'm also so excited about it.
The six-woman team will be on an autonomous flight, no pilot. 1963 marks the last all-female and solo space flight, when Soviet cosmonaut Valentina Tereshkova became the first woman in space. Amy Held, NPR News.
The Islamic holy month of Ramadan is beginning with the sighting of the crescent moon. The start date can vary by country. The month is celebrated by Muslims worldwide with prayer, fasting, and good works toward others. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students by sharing what works in pre-K through 12 education at edutopia.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Governor Hochul's administration has reached a tentative deal with the New York State Corrections Officers Union that could end that ongoing strike. From the New York Public News Network, WNYC's John Campbell reports, it's up to the individual officers whether to accept.
The union never authorized the strike that spread to 38 of the state's 42 prisons, so each officer will decide whether they return to work or not. The deal calls for suspending portions of a state law restricting the use of solitary confinement. It also includes overtime sweeteners and new staffing rules. At least three incarcerated people died in state prisons in recent days, though it's not clear whether those deaths were connected to deteriorating conditions during the strike. Officers face a tight deadline to return to work. If they do, they won't face additional penalties. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
And here from Sullivan County Government is Dan Hoost, who joins us every Friday. And Dan, thank you for being here. Any further updates from county government? This was an overnight development in the prison strike story. Anything else from the legislature? I know you guys had sent a letter to...
Legislators had sent a letter to Governor Hochul and the state commissioners, state corrections commissioner, Mr. Marticello, I think is how you say his name, and asking them to restore 100% staffing, which is, I think it's been around 70% of late, and also repeal the HALT Act, which, while I think the intentions were good, designed to reduce issues with inmates, it's, according to corrections officers, increased issues with inmates and also made their working conditions untenable. All nine legislators sent that letter, and there's a hope that there will be some sort of mediation because both inmates and officers are suffering right now, and the communities they serve are suffering as well. The state is suffering. This needs to come to an end in a way that preserves the rights and obligations of both officers and inmates. That's what legislators wrote in the letter, and that's where they continue to stand, hoping to see this end sooner rather than later. I don't think anyone wants this to continue.
There was no legislative meeting this week as scheduled, next one coming up next Thursday. However, legislators are continuing to offer support for the workers who are impacted by that closure of the PepsiCo plant here in Liberty. We had talked about that previously. They announced that they're closing that plant and impacting nearly 300 workers. What new developments do you have for us?
Well, I know that our Center for Workforce Development has been working with, I think, several dozen folks from the plant who are looking for other employment to see what their options are to stay local. We're working very hard to try to keep as many people local, although we've heard there's already some folks who have departed for other jobs in New Jersey, in the tri-state area, and that's sort of the sad outcome of all of this. We are waiting to hear from PepsiCo. I know the Chamber of Commerce met with them earlier this week to just talk about various issues, but we're waiting to hear about the disposition of the property. What we've heard is that the plant will shut down operations in their entirety sometime in April, and I believe the final layoff notices are good through, or good through, listen to me, are what's the word I'm looking for, will happen in May. Some people won't officially be laid off, there we go, until May. However, most of the workers, I believe, from what I was told, will see pay and benefits through to as long as the end of the year, actually. So there will be some semblance of a severance package, I guess you could say, which our chamber and the county was very pleased to hear about. But now the question is, what we want to do is get that property back up and running. If PepsiCo is willing to either sell or lease or rent it, we got to find that out from them first. Because even if we do find jobs for people in Sullivan County, it may not necessarily be in downtown Liberty where that plant is located. And that's the big concern, is how much is this going to impact the downtown Liberty business and residential community that has very heavily relied upon that plant being right there within walking distance of all the shops and the school. That could be a real devastating impact if that plant cannot be reopened to a similar level of staffing.
Liberty has been trying to undergo rehabilitation, I suppose, of the downtown mm-hmm. area. I drive through there, living here, being here in Liberty for work, and seeing some development there, like the Liberty Theater. There's yes. that apartment building that's being renovated there on the corner of Main and where 52 kind of ends there in the
Chestnut.
Town. Chestnut, yep. That's mm-hmm. it. There's signs of life. This, though, absolutely. is kind of a jab in the heart here a little bit, though.
This because could really hurt that.
Yeah. Dependent on so many of the people who work at that plant.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, downtown, you can see the businesses that definitely cater to the workers from the plant there. And they want to work. They want to continue working. We want to keep as many people here as we can to continue working. So while we're helping right now, like I said, our Center for Workforce Development is working with these folks to ensure that they have sustained and continuous employment. The big issue that we want to work on, and I'm told we might find out PepsiCo's plans next week. It's crucial for us to find out what is the plan for that property and then how we can come alongside PepsiCo and market it to whoever's going to be the next tenant so that we can keep people employed in downtown Liberty. This is a village of just a few thousand people. 300 jobs being lost in one fell swoop is a major impact on that community, and we cannot sit idly by and wait to see what happens. We need to be part of making sure what happens is going to be something good and successful.
And we'll definitely stay on this story. We'll definitely be asking you next week if you hear anything else from the PepsiCo
Absolutely.
Folks. Another story we've been paying attention to in the area has been avian flu. The last report we had was in Ulster County, but this week there was a report in Delaware County. So it seems to, is it spreading? What can you tell us?
It's surrounding us, right? Just we're reminding people, continue to be vigilant, especially if you have your own flock of domesticated birds. I believe that's what happened up in Delaware County. It was a smaller, not a larger flock. Of course, we have much larger flocks of birds in the area, and I'm sure those folks are terrified of what might be coming. But if you have just a few chickens, like my family does, actually, I've told them, don't take this any less seriously than the big producers just up the road. You need to be very vigilant to take a look and make sure that your birds are not acting strangely, that they aren't lethargic or looking like they're drunk or something. If you notice that, you need to contact our public health folks right away. That's 292-5910, 292-5910. If you see that in wild birds as well, if you're a bird watcher, have a bird feeder, and suddenly you see some of the birds acting very strangely on a consistent and sustained basis, give us a call. You're not going to annoy us or upset us if it turns out that it's not bird flu. We need to know as soon as this gets into our county. And unfortunately, it looks like it is almost inevitable because it's happened in Ulster and it's happened in Delaware. So while we want to continue to try to prevent it, at this point, preparation is as much key as anything else.
Delaware County Public Health Services reported an affected flock of 150 chickens, geese, and ducks. The New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets and the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service are assisting on site with depopulation, cleaning, and disinfection of the affected farm. And according to the Health Services Department, contact with the flocks was limited to the owner, and there have been no human cases of avian infections in cattle of New York, in New York. And again, individuals with direct contact with sick animals considered at low risk for avian influenza. But again, you should keep yourself and domestic pets and others away from these impacted birds if you see them.
Vigilance is what is necessary, and let us know if you see something that concerns you.
We're talking to Dan Hoost. He's the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday with news from Monticello. You have updated your county directory for 2025 in print and on the website. I can only imagine the task that this took for folks. This was like a spreadsheet omania here? Or?
Yeah, this is out of our clerk of the legislature office. Annie and her deputy, Kathy, put this together every year. And it is really the Bible for local political offices and even just organizations that work with us. This booklet or the online directory, which you can find at sullivanny.gov, just look for the county directory, but we have booklets as well available at the government center, has not only all the county offices, elected, appointed officials, but also all the courts and judges, all the school districts, town and village planning boards, zoning boards, town boards, supervisors, assessors, all the people you need to get in touch with at your local town. Yes, all these towns have websites, but you have to go to their specific websites. We have this all in one book. You can find this information. It is just a wonderful resource to have. It even has a handy little zip code list in the back.
Well, look at that. Mm-hmm. You're working hard over there. let's talk about this interesting vending machine. It's not where you would get snacks. It is right. Part of the Healing Communities Grant in partnership with Columbia University. And the Drug Task Force has provided a vending machine at the government center that distributes free Narcan.
Yeah, this actually we got through funding from a grant, a Healing Communities grant, for a study we did over 3 years in partnership with Columbia University. I was part of that. And the Drug Task Force got a vending machine that they put in the government center. It's actually in our annex near the probation office that distributes free Narcan. But now that grant has run out, we are actually free to stock that any way we want. So not only do we have free Narcan in there, but we've got dental care kits for adults and kids, tick removal kits, wound care kits, sexual health kits, and unlike your typical vending machine, these are all free.
Ah.
You don't even have to put in any identifying information. You simply have to follow the instructions and pick what you want. If you want more than one of something or something on from different rows, you can get that as well. We encourage everyone to use this as much as possible. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Dan Hoost, including a boater safety course coming up. Means spring could be close. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Jeffrey Toobin, legal commentator at CNN and author of articles and books on some of the most famous legal cases in recent history. His new book examines the history of presidential pardons and their impact today. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Donna Fellenberg here, host of Catskill Character. And this Saturday, my guest will be artist, teacher, and former Disney performer, Heather Lockwood. Heather's only lived here a year and a half, but already has a bustling career as an art teacher and maker, all out of Lockwood Creation Studio, right here in Calicoon. Tune in Saturday at 10:30 for my conversation with Heather Lockwood on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He's here with us every Friday. And Dan, did you know there are only 20 days left until spring?
Yeah.
Do you believe it?
I was about to say, maybe that applies down in Virginia or the Carolinas. Up here, I would say it's more like 2 or 3 months till spring.
I know. I know. We know where we live. But that does not prevent the Sheriff's Department from promoting their boater safety course, which is coming up in April. Tell us a little bit about this safety course and why it's important for folks.
They offer this every year, but this time it's become even more critically important. It turns out that every operator of a motor-powered watercraft in New York State has to have a boater safety certificate. My understanding is if you were under a certain age, I'm not exactly sure what it was, you didn't have to have that boater safety certificate, because I think teenagers can pilot boats. You have to have it now. So if you are out on a lake and you get stopped either on the lake or at the boat landing, and you don't have that certificate to show, you can be ticketed and fined for that. So this is really important for anyone who boats on public lakes. Private lakes are going to do your own thing, of course. But if you're on, for example, White Lake or Swinging Bridge Reservoir or Toronto Reservoir or whatever, you have to have this boater safety certificate. How do you get that? You get it through our Sheriff's Office Marine Patrol, who will be presenting this course on Sunday, April 6th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's a full day thing. I think lunch is included with that. You may have to bring some, but I'm sure there'll be some refreshments there. There's more information on our website and on the Sheriff's Office Facebook page. You have to register for this.
Now, this was something that had been phased in by age over the last few years, but now a requirement as of
January
1st.
My understanding from what they told me is that everybody who's going to be operating a boat out on, you know, a powered boat, obviously. If you're doing a rowboat, I hope they're not going to be asking you for a boater safety certificate. Maybe they will.
But it is mandatory now as of January 1st. It is mandatory.
It's worth doing. And listen, you'll probably see some folks you know or go or take the whole family with you, sign up for that and take them with you so that you all have a chance to learn together.
And if you have an out-of-state boating license, New York State does recognize the official NASBLA approved boater education cards and Transport Canada approved pleasure craft operator cards held by boaters who may be visiting the state. But note that your boating license must be issued from your current state of residence.
Oh, now you're just showing off.
Well, you know. Now, speaking of public health and safety, there's a public and health safety position open at county government.
Yeah, this is cool. We have not had this before, and we just put this out for a public safety health and wellness coordinator part-time, a salary of $35,000 a year, involves responsibility for developing, implementing, and managing health and wellness programs for public safety personnel and promoting health and wellness initiatives and activities in a variety of settings. It'll be work right through our Division of Public Safety. I assume they'll probably be based out at our Emergency Operations Center near White Lake, which is where we do training. It's a focus on all our emergency responders staying fit, and not just physically fit, but mentally and emotionally fit, because this job can take a huge toll on you there as well. And this person will be trained and basically have their focus and expertise in that kind of health and wellness so that you're prepared going into these difficult situations and afterwards as well, that you're supported as you need to be. And I just think it's cool that we're doing this. It will be open to our county staff who work over there as well, and many of those are already emergency responders. But this will be for our firefighters, our ambulance workers, our police officers. If you don't already have that in your own department, and even if you do, maybe we'll find ways to collaborate.
And this is a good time to mention that service you provide at the government, the workforce development folks provide that hot jobs list of not only jobs that are available at county government, but jobs that are available throughout the county and regionally as well. It looks like New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has some folks and some job listings available. But I happen to know someone who was working for a person who had retired and was looking for something to continue to do. And I suggested, you should go look at that website. And I just kind of went on to see what it was just to before I recommend something. And saw that there are so many different organizations that are represented from local restaurants to local vet services. You know, it's a pretty good list.
Yeah, our Center for Workforce Development is about workforce development throughout Sullivan County, not just for county government. Our Human Resources Office, they're the civil service office. They do it for not just the county, but the towns, the villages, the school districts. So we are all about filling those jobs. You know, we have the highest, still have one of the highest job growth rates in the state of New York. We have more jobs than people to fill them. That's actually sort of an enviable position to be in, although some employers will be smacking their head saying, no, I need employees. What all that is to say is if you're looking for a job, there's something out there for you here in Sullivan County.
And multiple listings in the categories of medical and also in human services. A lot of different opportunities from a lot of different folks in the area.
And it's not just entry level. Yes. Yeah. It's professional skilled stuff. So we're a place to, if you want to work, we're a place to be.
All right. Want to mention the latest Leadership Sullivan class. We're at the Government Center. Tell us a little bit about Leadership Sullivan for folks who may not be familiar with it.
Yeah, this is, I believe, part of the Chamber of Commerce. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it has been going on, for close to 30 years. Because we, on our tour of the Government Center, we found some people who had been part of Leadership Sullivan class of like 2000. Which didn't seem to feel so long ago, but now it does. Anyway, what this program overall does, and I'm not going to capture their mission completely, but you can always back me up on that, Tim. But my understanding is what they've done is try to cultivate our workers and growing leaders in the community into an understanding of everything that is happening in Sullivan County that they should know about, that they should know more about. I remember, I grew up in Sullivan County. When I became a reporter for the Sullivan County Democrat, I was young and cocky and like, what? I know so many things about Sullivan County. I spent the next 21 years of my career finding out how little I did know about Sullivan County. As I told this class, I said my job was basically Leadership Sullivan every day to find out more and more about what is offered in the county and understand how things work here, how things happen, what the concerns are. And so they had a chance to visit county government earlier this week, amongst many other places that they're visiting, public and private, business, government, school. We gave them a tour of the Government Center and opened their eyes to how many things are in that building. A lot of people think Government Center, okay, that's DMV, clerk's office, treasurer's office, maybe where I have to pay taxes. And then if you're a veteran or office for the aging or something, but we have a lot more in there than you realize, including a place to go search genealogy. It's a state office in there, the surrogate court's office. There are our planning division stands ready. They have the parks office there. We have, of course, human resources there. We have our legal office that deals with family court that is located in there. Their eyes were open to it all. We had a wonderful meeting with them. I think we're going to make this tour a regular event. And I want to mention to people as well, because I enjoy doing these and I think this is part of communicating to the public. I love giving these tours. So if you have a group that is interested in coming, 4-H, Rotary, a school class, your church group or something, and you want to get a tour of the building and understand what the offices are that are there and how they operate, what they do for the taxes that you pay, contact me. 807-0450. That's 845-807-0450. We can make it happen.
This is amazing. You can meet the face behind the voice as well.
Oh, there we go. Well,
selfies. You'll be like going viral soon.
Now you could make me want to walk it back. Now,
no,
I have to stay behind the camera, not in front of it.
No, you're going to get a lot of response from this. I think.
I hope so, because it really does give people an understanding that it's not just the big fights you hear about in legislature meetings that are going on at the Government Center or the DMV, where you had to go and spend some time having to pay somebody to the state to get your license or whatever. There's a lot more going on there, and it's really a fun thing to do. It's pretty easy. It takes maybe an hour to do the tour, but you get a lot out of it.
All right. Take them up on that, everybody. Before we go, we've got a performance at the County Museum this Sunday, something that was rescheduled because of weather, I think.
Yes, because we had... You remember that? We had some bad weather, some really cold and nasty ice.
Here in the Northeast?
Yes. No. But Annie and Mike Baglione, a husband and wife duo who are really talented with all sorts of folk and Americana music, will be joining Little Sparrow, Carol and Aldo, who help run our museum, actually, in Hurleyville. They'll be there at 2 p.m. this Sunday to give a free concert performance. And I make it sound like it's something where you just sit, come and listen, and you're on your way. No, it's more than that. It's a real enjoyable time to be with folks in your community, meet some new people. There'll be some refreshments. And before or after the show, you also can wander around the museum and see we got stuff dating back 200 or more years that are located in there, things you never even knew existed in Sullivan County. It's a pretty cool place.
Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday with an update from Monticello. And now, tours.
Tour guide.
Call him.
I don't have a bus to do it, but...
Oh, you'll get one soon.
I'll get a wand or something. And this wand is...
There, I can't wait to see how this explodes. Dan Hoost, thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, the reaction from some a very upset New York NYSEG customers, who are looking for answers to those staggeringly high increases in their electric bills this winter. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Recently on Wait Wait, Nagin Farsad said she does not look forward to the day when people can cheat on their spouses with robots.
I would be so jealous. I'd be like, you're coming home smelling like titanium.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week, comedian Roy Wood Jr. cheats on his comedy quiz about the week's news by joining us on Ours. That's Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, a story that's we've been reporting on that's probably affecting you as well. A growing number of NYSEG customers reporting increases in their electric bills this winter, some seeing charges soar by double or even triple figures in response to mounting pressure from frustrated customers. New York State Assemblymember Paula Kay arranged a public meeting held yesterday at the Sullivan County Government Center where NYSEG representatives addressed customer concerns. Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio attended the meeting and brings us this report.
Assemblymember Paula Kay from the 100th Assembly District was one of the officials who helped organize this workshop for customers.
I am very happy to see so many people are coming out because this issue is so important to them. And you can see how important this issue is to a lot of the folks here. I never want to see someone choosing between paying rent, paying electricity, or buying food that they need. And because of the current billing situation, that's clearly an issue. So I'm very hopeful. NYSEG has a huge staff here that at least on some of the bills that are here will be able to come to answers, show some irregularities, and others where it's a hike because of the temperature differential between this year and last year, NYSEG has promised to help with no late fees, certainly not turning off anybody's electricity, and then we have resources that we can send people to help to pay their bills because it's clear. Everybody's in this line, this huge line, because their bills are much higher than they were ever before.
According to NYSEG, the increase are due to a rising supply cost and a colder winter, but some customers aren't convinced. We spoke with several attendees to hear their stories. From Sullivan County, Rosemary, she said her bill is more higher than it was normally.
I definitely got a higher than normal bill. They're saying that it is the delivery charge, which is silly, but okay. And then the increased charges. It's actually getting to the point where my electric bill is now is almost as much as my mortgage. So, you know, we're going to have to make some cutbacks and figure out exactly what we're going to do.
Sean Williams from Hurleyville came to the workshop looking for answers for his high bills. Unfortunately, he felt he didn't get the help that he needed.
Basically, I have to do some stuff here and send in my bills. Just what I thought I had to do.
Right. How high was your bill?
Pretty high. Really? It was over double than what I usually pay.
Wow. So what answers did they give you? Like you have to conserve more electricity? The rates went up.
Yep. That's all I can get is the rates went up.
Wow.
And the reason why? Don't know.
Still don't know. So what is your plan now?
Is to send my bills in, compare them, and hopefully they can do something and get these straight. I've lived in my house for 30 years, and I've never seen rates this high as in last couple of years.
Ephraim from Coshecton says he still doesn't understand why his house is using so much electricity while he's away, as he didn't get the answers he was looking for at this workshop.
I look my meter, and my meter jump off from usually we use about 1,600 kilowatts a month. The past month went up a little bit over, but then now it jumped up to almost 3,000 kilowatts out of nowhere. So I came here to see they can explain to me how come we burn so much when me and my wife work almost 7 days a week. We never home. But my electric bill went high, and he don't know why the meter read 3,000. I mean, the price is right for the 3,000. I just want to know where the 3,000 kilowatts came from.
Did you get your questions? No,
I'm still in limbo, the same thing. So nothing they got to do for me. They got to, they took a $547, and they don't got to do nothing for me. It's one of those things. I'm sorry. God bless you, and you and you on. So I lost $300.
NYSEG President and CEO Patricia Nielsen was also in attendance and defended the company's pricing structure.
So our delivery prices have stayed the same per kilowatt price since our rate increase in May. The supply price, which we have to purchase on the open market, and for some rates has to be a price we can't even hedge. We don't make any profit on that price, but we have to pass it on. And unfortunately, the market prices have gone up, and customers are feeling that pain point with energy supply.
Okay. So what can folks do to sort of better their bill going forward?
Well, one of the things that will help customers is that smart meter, because we'll be able to give customers usage alerts so that before they get their bill, they can see if they're using more energy than normal. Because the other thing that happened is while supply prices went up, the temperature went down. Even if you keep your house at the same temperature, when it's colder outside, that furnace has to work harder if you're heating. So some of the things that customers can do is get the smart meters so that they can get those usage alerts, take advantage of the weatherization programs and services to batten down the hatches, think about how they're using energy. And if they are on a day-night rate, look to see that that rate is really beneficial for them. If you're on a straight rate, you're paying the same price per kilowatt hour. If you're on a day-night rate, you really have to be able to shift your energy use to that off-peak time.
Patricia Revaya reporting from Sullivan County Government Center in Monticello yesterday at that NYSEG meeting. We'll continue to stay on this story, and also you can read more at our website, wjffradio.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Bethel Woods is empowering teen creativity with a new program, Project Identity Open Studios. We'll find out more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Recently on Wait, Wait, Nagin Farsad said she does not look forward to the day when people can cheat on their spouses with robots.
I would be so jealous. I'd be like, you're coming home smelling like titanium.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week, comedian Roy Wood Jr. cheats on his comedy quiz about the week's news by joining us on Ours. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. If you have a teen, know a teen, or are a teen with a creative spark, Project Identity Open Studios at Bethel Woods provides a unique and supportive environment for young people to explore their interests in music, digital art, animation, and design with access to professional-grade tools, expert mentorship, and the space to collaborate with peers. It's a program designed to unlock their potential and inspire the next generation of creators. Here to tell us more is Katie Savoda from Bethel Woods. Good morning, Katie.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, thanks for being here. This sounds pretty exciting for teens to be able to go to a place with this professional grade tool experience. What makes this unique compared to some other creative programs, and how did it kind of come about?
Absolutely. So we have had teen programming here at Bethel Woods for a number of years, and it's all kind of fallen under the umbrella of this program, Project Identity, because we truly believe that the arts help young people find their identity and express themselves. And it started with photography, I would say about 5 or 6 years ago. And these were really intensive workshops on digital photography, about 10 weeks long, where teens would come, learn about the art of photography, take field trips, and at the end of the program, they would earn a camera. And the program was very popular, and we had a number of teens who came through the program. We do have a second tier of that program where it's kind of like an alumni event. They would come together and celebrate their accomplishments. But we found that we had teens that just kept coming back looking for more. So we did expand the program to include digital media. It was our media studio program where teens learned all about animation and digital art. And again, we had returning teens from the photography program come and new folks as well. And we're just finding that kids just want to be here. They want to be in this inspiring place. This was the site of the 1969 Woodstock Music Festival, which has kind of a cool factor. Okay. They want to be here. They want to be with their friends creating. So we've expanded the program to include open studio time. So it will involve an open studio model on Tuesdays and Thursdays where teens who have done our programming.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
Okay.
So teens who have done our programming before can come back and just create, but there will also be an introductory track for new folks on Saturdays.
And it sounds like you're meeting teens where they are, right? We're talking about the next generation of creators, right? Folks can pick up their phone and create content with a flick of a button. I think that's probably the wrong terminology. It shows my age. But, do you feel like this is really helping support the development of younger folks because
absolutely.
Of this? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. You know, we've realized that a lot of creation can be done on our phones. I have an 8-year-old at home who's able to do more in the digital media realm than I can. But we really believe that connection piece, that shared experience is so important in the arts. We realize that teens can come together here and really create things collaboratively or independently. But if they're alongside a peer and they can kind of bounce ideas off each other, it's so much stronger and more meaningful. And we also want, like you said, to develop teens to realize that this is a fun hobby. This is a great way for them to express themselves creatively. But there are jobs that abound in this realm, especially here at Bethel Woods. And so we provide access to some more professional level tools. We have a really wonderful roster of teaching artists. There's going to be 7 different teaching artists who are helping to lead this program, all who have professional backgrounds in digital media and music production, who can share their experiences and kind of talk about where they started and how they turned this passion of theirs into a really successful career. Something really exciting is we'll be able to offer behind-the-scenes tours of the Bethel Woods campus and the pavilion where we hold concerts for these teens so they can really see where opportunities are in their area to use their creativity and their passions to find a career or pursue an education. We'll be taking a field trip to New York City during this program for free. This is, part of the program. And we're going to visit the Museum of the Moving Image and just kind of see what opportunities are beyond Sullivan County as well.
How are you ensuring the program remains inclusive for teens of all experience levels, from beginners to folks who may be a little bit more proficient when it comes to, this kind of content creation?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the program is totally free, so anybody who wants to participate can. And also, we are offering an introductory track alongside this open studio time. So every Saturday, we will have workshops to help teens understand how to use some of these more professional tools to work alongside their peers to kind of develop projects. And then on the Tuesdays and Thursdays, where it is totally open studio time, we will have teaching artists on hand who are providing projects that they can work on or helping shepherd them through projects of their own creation. So it'll be rubric-based, and we will have like instruments in place to help measure growth and help them stick with their goals to kind of develop these projects throughout the course of the 10 weeks of the program. So it's open studios, but it's not like the teens will just show up and be expected to just do it on their own. That's they'll right. have tons of support while they're here.
And the mentorship part of it is great. The teaching artists who have that experience and relaying their experience in different industries or tracks that potential students could go into out of this. They're also building a portfolio during this process. Why is that important for the program, and how does it benefit students in the long run, do you think?
Well, certainly anybody who is looking to go on to higher education, this is a program for 14 to 18-year-olds. We do have students who come from the local high schools, but we have a really big homeschool community that takes advantage of these programs. So we understand that in order to go on to higher education or even pursue a job, a part-time job or a full-time job, it's really great to have evidence of your work, to have evidence of the things that you've been putting together in a, you know, extracurricular environment, or even at school. If students have projects that they're working on at school and they want to have another perspective or have some maybe extra tools that they don't have at school to use for these projects, they can do that here at Bethel Woods. We have a new updated computer lab with just so many different kinds of software on there that will be at the disposal of the participants of this program, the Adobe Suite, the Adobe Creative Suite. We have all kinds of music production software, Ableton, Logic, Pro Tools. So if a teen is working on something at home or even at school and they want to bring it here and take it to the next level, we're happy to support them in doing that.
What kind of skills do you hope teens are going to take away from this program, both in terms of, you know, their creative abilities and then these real world applications?
Absolutely. Well, there is an element of critique that happens with all of our programming here at Bethel Woods. So we understand that it's important for artists to not only create, but to be able to have productive and positive conversations with other artists about their work. So we have a really positive critique process here at Bethel Woods where we come together and we look at each other's work and we say, I think, I wonder, I might suggest about their work to help students think about how they can advance what they're doing, enhance what they're doing. So there will be an element of kind of building presentation skills, certainly collaboration with other peers. There'll be a social element to this as well. We realize that, you know, it's been a long, cold winter, and it's really a great opportunity for teens to come out and interact with people from their community. People come from all across Sullivan County to participate in this program, so it's a great way to meet new people and practice social skills, quite honestly. But when we talk about specific skills, topics will include beat making, using digital music and digital instrumentation programs. We will also have a music teacher on hand who knows how to play and teach guitar, keyboard, drums, brass instruments. So if we have teens who are musically inclined and want to come and work on their instrumentation, we'll have teaching artists on hand. We'll be using Adobe Photoshop, Adobe Creative animation programming. So there's a ton of skills to be learned.
What do you say to parents, or would you say to parents who are considering signing up their kids for a program like this, but might not be sure whether their child has the necessary skills or experience?
Oh, please just do it.
Yeah. Really, they probably do, really, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. I mean, I am a parent and I can tell you that Sullivan County has no shortage of wonderful programming for kids out there, and we're so happy to be among the many people in our community who are offering arts-based programming. But I will say that the resources that we have here at Bethel Woods are really tremendous, and we are really hoping to share them with our community, with the young people in our community. I think it also, this program is really unique because we know that kids are tech-minded. We know that kids have a lot of access to technology at home, and this is such a great opportunity to bring them in to be using it collaboratively with their peers and learning how that they can use this to advance themselves. And I just think that it's a really wonderful program.
How can students apply, and what's the process for getting involved with Project Identity Open Studios?
There's an application online. It's a really simple application that just helps us understand where students are at and what they're interested in. And it's at bethelwoodcenter.org. There's a drop-down menu where you go to programs, and then you can go to teen programming. So once you apply, you'll receive a letter that gives information about the first session, which is going to be taking place this Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. And during that first session, we're going to have an orientation where we share details about the program, some of the expectations of the program, and we do invite students to bring a guardian with them for that so that any questions can be asked and answered. It's a pretty simple application process, and as I said, the program is totally free, so we hope that people will come out.
And before we go, we should mention that you have explored your interest in music. You are hosting, filling in tomorrow for Sonia Hedlund on Ballads and Banjos. What can we expect for the show tomorrow?
The show is going to be super fun. It is actually exploring the soundtrack from the movie Will and Harper, which I found to be a very inspirational movie, and the soundtrack is fantastic. And I have to mention that I started helping Sonia with her radio show during COVID. So I was living at Apple Pond Farm, and COVID happened, and Sonia needed to learn real quick how to produce a show at home. Using Audacity, I have to say, which is one of the programs we will be exploring in Project Identity here at Bethel Woods. Oh my goodness. And what an example of arts helping the community come together. Because as a result of that, I met Angela Page from Folk Plus. Mm-hmm. She trained me on Audacity. And then I helped Sonia produce Ballads and Banjos. And I've been helping her ever since. So I'm excited to be hosting the show tomorrow.
Yeah, that's tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Not only are you teaching this, you're living it as well. So the students that are going to be involved in this program are going to get some expert advice. So thank you for that.
Thank you,
Tim. And thank you for being here. And there's more information about Project Identity Open Studios at BethelWoodsCenter.org. And again, be sure to listen to Katie filling in tomorrow on Ballads and Banjos at 7 a.m. here on Radio Catskill. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Tim. Have a great day.
You too. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a news beat that we find to be very important, pancakes and maple syrup. There is an event this weekend. We'll have the latest right after this.
Spring is approaching, we hope. So to get us all in the mood, on the next Waggler and Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, on Radio Catskill, we hear songs about songbirds as they tune up for the mating season, and some English bird song as well. Please tune in for the Songs of the Birds on Sunday afternoon at 3.
I'm Mimi Bradley, Radio Catskills Development Manager, reminding you that a great way to keep public radio here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania is by becoming a Sound Supporter. Sound supporters give small amounts, $20, $30, $50 a month or more, that add up to a big help. Plus, Sound supporters get special thank yous, like drawings for tickets to events in our community throughout the year. Become a Sound supporter. Go to wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The fifth annual Maple Syrup Harvest Pancake Breakfast hosted by the Damascus Manor Community Center is tomorrow. And here to tell us more about this sweet event is Linda Dexter from the Damascus Manor Community Center. Linda, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the history of this maple syrup celebration and breakfast at Damascus Manor Community Center. How did it all begin?
Well, it began with the trees. We are surrounded by, or we have those beautiful trees that give us that sap that has history to it. And that's where our syrup comes from. And we have several, many actually sugar bushes, which they're called, in our area, Wayne County, and in the northeastern Pennsylvania area.
And this event also offers a self-guided tour to these local sugar bushes, providing a hands-on, tree-to-table experience. Tell us a little bit about that and how it connects folks who are attending to the roots of the maple syrup production in the area.
Well, we have there are several sugar bushes, farms, professional operations, even backyardists that are a part of this tour. I believe there's about 15 in all that stretch up and down Wayne County, and they will be open both Saturday and Sunday for tours of their facilities. You can see the actual process, the gathering of the sap, however they gather it. Some people use lines, and others use the old bucket, way of collecting the sap, and then taking it into the sugar houses where it's then processed. It's really a very interesting education on such a product that we are we're very unique in the world on.
Well, I was going to say it's unique because when you think pancake breakfast, you're like, oh, I know what to expect. But there's this educational component to it as well in this tour. And that's especially exciting for maybe people new to the area or who haven't ever attended before. And it also shows all the community support and local producers that are behind bringing this maple syrup to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And the farms are beautiful. The operations are just, you know, it just kind of blows my mind when I go on these tours and see what they're doing.
This is a volunteer-driven event. Share with us how Damascus Manor Community Center works with the community to make this event happen and what role volunteers play for pulling this off.
Well, we are, as you indicated, or as you said, the Damascus Manor Community Center. We're located 60 Conklin Hill Road, Damascus, and we are a facility that is open to the community. We host several events. We're not just pancake breakfasts, but we also host just an array of events. We have opportunities for people to rent space if they need, a facility. We're located on a beautiful piece of land. We have a state-of-the-art playground that's part of our facility, and outdoor amphitheater. Of course, right now at this time of the year, it's a little cold.
Maybe not right now, right?
Maybe not right now, but the kids do love it.
Yeah,
and the families do. We're very family oriented, and so the events that we have throughout the year, which we advertise, are for bringing families in, introducing people to the area, new folks that are moving in, letting them know that, you know, there are things available, places available. We consider ourselves like a news board to get information out into the community about community happening. So it's I'm real proud that we have a group of volunteers. We love to have more. You can get on a committee and help, you know, see a particular event to fruition and have a lot of fun. One of the things we do, we have in October, we have a trunk or treat that happens up at the community center. And oh my goodness, it is so fun to see the children come and the parents come to a really safe and wonderful event for their little ones.
Well, you might get a few more interested volunteers tomorrow. Let's remind folks the details tomorrow, what time it starts, cost, any other important information people need to know about the 5th Annual Maple Syrup Harvest Pancake Breakfast tomorrow.
Absolutely. It will begin at 8 o'clock. We're running from 8 until noon. We are serving a full breakfast of pancakes, classic and buckwheat, with that golden syrup on it, maple syrup. Scrambled eggs, sausage, bacon, orange juice, applesauce, tea, coffee, you know, just a full breakfast. It's going to be $14 for adults, $12 for seniors, 65 and up, and for children, 12 and under, $7. We're going to have a couple raffles. We have like a 50-50. That would go to our local food pantry. We're going to have some sales. We might have a few things of maple syrup that we can sell. We'll have maple syrup cookies. A lot of things to tantalize the taste buds.
Well, you're already tantalizing my taste buds. I'm getting hungry, Linda. Thank you so much again. It's the 5th Annual Maple Syrup Harvest Pancake Breakfast, hosted by Damascus Manor Community Center. It's tomorrow from 8 to noon at the center, which is at 60 Conklin Hill Road in Damascus. We've been talking to Linda Dexter from Damascus Manor Community Center. Linda, have a great time tomorrow morning, and save us some maple syrup.
Thank you. I hope we will.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, SullivanCatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden, at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, CatskillBrewery.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota. We'll talk about why the Democrats lost the November election and what they should be doing now with Donald Trump back in office. Tim Walz joins me next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Overcast this afternoon, a few flurries or snow showers might be possible. Temps nearly steady in the mid-30s. Tonight, a low of 32. Tomorrow, a partly cloudy, a morning high of 40, with temperatures falling to near 25 degrees by the evening. Tomorrow night's low 8. And then for Sunday, a high of only 20. On Points next, it's 11 o'clock.